Hey, it's Zach. During this time of social isolation with no games to watch, ESPN Podcast is still posting a ton of new content from all of your favorite shows. Last week alone, there were new episodes of the ESPN Daily, the Woj Pod, the Hoop Collective, the SVP Pod, Ariel Helwani's MMA Show, Baseball Tonight, and more. You can listen to all of these and more wherever you get your podcasts. Marathon gasolines are formulated with STP additives. They keep your vehicle running at peak performance by optimizing fuel economy, removing those ugly deposit buildups, and by reducing emissions. And right now, you can get 5 cents off every gallon, every day, with Make It Count rewards from Marathon. Plus, you can earn points for additional savings on fuel, airfare, hotels, and more. Remember when we used to be able to travel? This is definitely a win-win deal. It's easy and quick to join. Just download the free Make It Count app, or go to makeitcount.com/radio. So join the Marathon team and start saving today. This offer is valid only at participating Marathon stations. Remember, wherever your journey goes, it pays to start at Marathon. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, where you know what I want to do? I want to talk about basketball. I want to screw everything else for just a minute or an hour and talk about basketball. And I want to talk about happy basketball things. And the happiest basketball award that we will have to decide on at the end of the season, whenever that is the Most Improved Player Award. Because you know what? Improvement is good. Improvement as people, as humans, as players, it just makes you feel good. And I want to feel good. And I like to talk about Most Improved Players stuff with a person who actually knows what they're talking about, like a coach. And I thought of a coach in Florida who I haven't podcasted with in a long time. And we usually do a first round playoff series rapid fire preview. That's not going to happen for a while. So David Thorpe, how are you?
I'm fine, Zach. Thank you for asking. Everyone I know mostly is fine, and really thrilled to hear your voice, my man.
Yep, it's been it's been something. It's been, but you and yours are well. You're quarantined down in Florida.
Yes, you know, I quarantined early. I went to Tallahassee with my son and my wife for kind of a college visit, and well, it was a college visit. We spent some time with the team. And then 12,000 fans, and I was a little bit uneasy, but it was something I felt we had to do. And on the late drive home that Saturday night, this would be March the 7th, we had spring break for my kids who are kind of in college while they're still in high school. And we were supposed to spend a couple of days at Universal and Disney, which is 90 minutes away, just to enjoy a few, 3 days together. And I canceled it. I just said, you know what, we took a risk, and I realize it's not a big deal here in America, but I have tons of players and friends in Europe. And I shut it down. We've been quarantined since pretty much midnight, the morning of March the 8th. And so far, everything's going okay. And we're lucky where I live. We have a lot of space.
You got both kids there with you?
Yeah, we have my kids, my wife, my mother-in-law lives walking distance away. My parents live 5 minutes away. And so the only thing we're really doing is going out to, like a lot of people my age and younger, we're shopping for our parents who are lucky to have three of the four still alive as parents. But like I said, where I live, I'm very fortunate. We got a good amount of land. I don't see my neighbors ever. You have to really go out of your way to see people. And in the big cities, they must be going stir crazy. I have a yard and a basket and a pool. I have zero complaints, and I can only think about the people that are having it much worse than us, not to mention the healthcare workers or those that got sick and are getting sick. It's a scary time for them, I know.
You got any board games that bring out the competitive juices in your teenage children? You got any board games where it's just someone's flipping the board over three quarters of the way through in disgust?
It's such a great question. No, although I would tell you that
your family's probably very nice to each other. My family, boy, when Zach was a teenager and it wasn't, you know, like Scattergories wasn't going well for me. If, like, God forbid my little sister was ahead, it could get ugly.
Well, my daughter normally isn't a competitive person. She danced competitively, but she's not competitive. But last night, my son, who is the worst video game player of all time because he never, ever plays, but this is what you have to do. So he's playing Madden, which is apparently a very hard game to play. And he didn't play football. I wouldn't let him. So I'm trying to help him. He doesn't know what any of the words mean, and he's terrible. And so he just gets disconsolate. But my daughter got mad at my wife, who won like five straight games of Rummy Cube, which is kind of a big thing in our house.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I grew up on it, too. So my wife got hot. She won five straight games, and I thought my daughter might just literally pull the old movie routine of shoving everything off the table onto the ground. She didn't, but we were getting close.
Let me get your ruling on a – this is a very controversial low family board game moment from about 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It was Pictionary.
Yeah.
Remember Pictionary? And it was the boys versus the girls, father and son versus mother and daughter.
Yeah.
Father and son were, it was like, we were not going to win. Like, we're worse at Pictionary. So we were resorting to any rule stretching chicanery that we could find. And one of the, so remember the action category was always the hardest one. So we got action and it was a race and I had a pencil and I flipped the pencil over and just started erasing. And that was ruled ineligible. My dad got it right away. And my mom and my sister threw a fit and said, no, you have to draw something. It's not fair to just erase. And I said, wait a second. I have a pencil. The action is a race. This is like what it was like because we were so bad. We had to cheat. I don't think that's cheating. I contend to this day that was clever and we deserved the credit for that one.
I normally would always side with the women on pretty much every issue known to man. That's how I've stayed married almost 30 years now, but I'm not married to anyone in your family. I vote for you because to me, as long as you didn't draw the words out or mouth it out, like lip sync it, it's all fair. I was banned from Pictionary because tables, chairs, cars, elephants, humans, it's all the same figure for me. And so it just drove everyone crazy. So I haven't played in a long, long time, but I don't see what you did was wrong, but I understand their argument. I'll tell you that.
This made my day. Okay. So most improved player. Let's talk about the NBA. Most improved player is one of my favorite awards to do because I cast the net incredibly wide because a lot of players get better. And I tend to start with like 30, 40 guys of like, all right, this guy seems borderline. Then I whittle and I whittle and I whittle. And this time I whittled and when I got to 12, I reached a point where like now the whittling is starting to feel bad. I feel like I'm actually whittling away someone who deserves consideration. And I emailed you that we initially were going to pick our top 10. And you said, that's funny. I have two honorable mentions myself. So you also had 12. And let me just also preface this. This is a uniquely, I think, interesting year for this because there's all these sort of like species of most improved a candidate. There's the guy who like did nothing ever before and then emerges as a real player. There's the guy who, and this we have a couple of these, the guys who go from really, really good to superstar. And we have a couple that did that in year two, which is very unusual. That's always a tough one to deal with. I tend to gravitate toward the guys who go from like pretty good to really good in their third or fourth years and had a harder time finding that kind of player this year. So I don't know. That's my preface. People can probably guess some of the guys I'm talking about. I don't know if you want to start with your top choice or your two honorable mentions. I kind of want you to start with your two honorable mentions. Who's like 11 and 12?
Yeah. First of all, I love the way you segmented it because that's exactly how I looked at it was. And I tend to reward, to me, the hardest jump is to jump into superstardom. I think anyone would say that because we just have so few superstars, right? But listen, I'm the godfather of player development only because I was dumb enough to have no other way to make any money in the 90s other than try to work with players. I had no clue it would become a business everywhere in the world. I was charging $15 to $25 an hour to work with high school kids in an outdoor court, which happens now to be right outside my house. 3-minute walk, but it used to have to drive to get here. And so I have such a soft spot for the players who we thought may not even stick in the league, no matter where they were drafted. And all of a sudden it's clear they're going to be players. So that's where I am with the honorable mentions. One of them might be higher on your list, but Christian Wood was a guy. I don't know if he'd make the NBA. He's clearly going to be a good NBA player. We don't know.
We're one for one so far in overlap. He's not probably going to make my most improved ballot, but he is one of my final 12. So we're one for one.
Exactly. So, and it's funny, you talked about whittling. I have a bunch of really good players crossed out. They just couldn't get my top 12. Wood made it. And then this is personal for me. I did a Cleveland radio show last year where I was praising the potential, even though he was terrible, of Colin Sexton. And the radio guy was great, but apparently he got beat up with, that guy Thorpe's an idiot. Sexton is the worst draft pick ever. He's going to be terrible forever. And I'm sorry, he's not. He's going to be pretty good. So he didn't make my top 10. I'm sure he's making no one's top 10. But he finished the season as it stands incredibly strong. And he wasn't good enough to be a top 10 because there were 10 guys that deserve it more. But I thought I needed to mention the fact that this guy's going to be a player. I'm not sure about Garland. But Sexton's going to be a player in this league for a long time.
So he was on, I have my 12, and then I have, just to be nice to people, I have below that, here are my last cuts, or like guys that I thought were just in, like, worthy of, you know, almost getting there. And Sexton's one of them. I have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Bruce Brown, DeAnthony Melton, Jaylen Brown, a name that I literally can't read because my writing sucks and my brain is addled, and OG Anunoby. So I agree with you about Colin Sexton. I think he's, in the last month or 6 weeks, he's been averaging like 26 a game or something crazy on good shooting. Yeah. Whether that can translate to winning, I think he needs obviously to improve his playmaking, which is slowly but surely coming along, and he needs to improve his defense, which for typical of young undersized guards is slowly but surely. It's going to take a while. But he's always had a sort of moxie and guts to him that I really, really like. And I root for guys like that to channel it the right way, because he is scared of nobody and nothing. And it's like a little bit of, without the athleticism and the size, he has a little bit of like the Westbrook, just get the fuck out of my way, I'm going to score, I think I'm the best guy on the floor, even though I'm like the eighth best guy on the floor. And I like guys like that, because if they can figure it out, I think they do have a legitimately galvanizing kind of effect on their teammates. And so I'm rooting for him, and I'm glad you brought him up.
Yeah, he can really shoot, and he's not a Westbrook athlete, but he's an athlete. He's a high-level athlete. So fearless competitor, very, very good, if not borderline elite athlete, that can really shoot. In 2 years in a row now, he's been 38 and 40%, so we know he can shoot. Those guys can make it. He just stuck on a terrible team. A lost team. I think that if you put him on a lot of other teams right now, he looks like a much better player. But yeah, I don't know. I don't follow it as closely as you. I feel like this was the hardest year to find. I really think you're going to laugh at some of my picks, because guys that are 10, 9, and 8 could be like top 5 in a lot of other years. There's just so many candidates.
All right. Just go. Give me 10, 9, and 8. How about we start there?
All right. So I'm embarrassed to tell you number 10. That's how good I think he is. But one of those guys that last year we weren't sure would be around much longer. Not that he wouldn't be in the league, but we didn't know how impactful he'd be. He didn't do a whole lot for the Raptors late in the year. But Norman Powell is a hell of a player now.
He's on my list. We're 2 for 3.
He's really good on a fantastic team, and he's part of it. But if you're just along for the ride, you're not going to get mentioned from me. But he is a part of this story. He's not the biggest part. And I'll talk about the biggest part later, because he's higher on my list. But what Norman Powell did this year to me, it deserved a top 10, because he's suddenly a guy that is going to be in this league as a starter for a really good team. A year ago, I don't know that we at all thought that'd be the case, for sure.
So he's on my list. My hot take, we're going to disagree on this a little bit, yeah. It seems like. I think he's the best, most improved player candidate on the Raptors. And he doubled his scoring average. He's averaging like 16 a game. He's shooting 50 from the field, 40 from three. His minutes are way up, which is obviously part of his production. But as you know, part of this is like what happens to you when you get from 18 minutes to 30 minutes. Do you produce at the same level, or does your efficiency fall off? When your efficiency actually improves, that's very, very impressive to me. And like you said, he's been starting because they've had so many injuries. He started a lot of games for them. On the other hand, he sort of feels like the same player, just making more shots. But I also feel he is more relentless and competitive on both ends of the floor this year. Defensively, I think that's really showed up. I think he's a perfectly good candidate, and I don't know if he's going to make my top three, but he's on my list. So give me, unless you got any other Norm thoughts, go on to the next one.
Yeah, well, the only thing I'd say on Norm is I think you took first of all, you said he averaged 8 more points per game than last year. That's a big jump, but only 5 more shots. So, you know, he's not just getting volume, he's getting efficiency. And 3 more free throws a game, too, tells you something.
Yeah.
And he's statistically one of the better players in the league, whereas last year he was below 0 on the in ESPN's Real Plus Minus. So number 9, again, I'm always waiting for you to laugh at me. Not that I think these guys are terrible names, but I feel like they could all be ranked higher. Certainly Powell could. Number 9 for me, I have Brandon Ingram,
and he's on my list too. We're rolling.
I'm a huge Ingram fan. I wrote a piece for True Hoop a year ago when the trade didn't happen, that I thought it was completely absurd. The Pelicans didn't grab all those talented players, to include Zubac, by the way, because they could have had him. Because I thought the idea of waiting for Tatum, and I'm going to sound stupid saying this, but waiting for Tatum because he was so much better than Ingram and all those other guys, I thought was stupid. Grabbed all these studs because I thought Ingram was going to be a high-level scorer. The fact that he's number nine on our list is because of the talent. He did it for a team that was beat up injury-wise, as you well know, and all of a sudden, as the season went on, he became a legit scorer, a leader. He definitely contributed and competed on defense, and they were an interesting team had we been able to finish the season.
24 points a game, efficient shooting from three, which had been a weak spot for him. Every stat is up. I actually thought it was quite impressive that there was very little. I'm looking it up, 39% from three. That's really good. On six, by the way, more impressive on six attempts a game. He's never attempted more than 2.5 before in any season. So that's not fake, selective shooting. I thought his integration with Zion was so smooth.
Yeah.
And I didn't necessarily think it was going to go that way because their starting lineup with Zion and Favors and Lonzo and Ingram is a little light on outside shooting, at least based on their track records before this season for Lonzo and Ingram. And Ingram still scored pretty well, took a slight step back in usage, found a nice kind of entry pass chemistry and all that stuff with Zion. And I thought it was very smooth. I have to say, though, there is something, and I don't know what it is. Maybe you don't feel it, but if you do, I'd be interested. There is something with Ingram, because he's coming up in my All-NBA research and everything. There is something that just leaves me a little bit wanting, like something that just in my gut is like, I'm not sure he's quite as good as his numbers and quite as good as his peers that have similar numbers. And I don't know if it's just like his playmaking and his defense are just a little bit behind it to me, his statistics and his overall profile and in ways that I think are going to be hard for me to quantify and prove. But there's just something I feel watching him where I'm like, he's good. He's really good. He was an all-star, and I thought he deserved it. I'm not sure he's at that like that guy level yet, and I can't quite put my finger on why.
Well, it's because he hasn't done it. I think it's actually a really insightful point. And I'm a big believer that smart people are supposed to project what a guy's going to be and not say, well, let me see it first. But there is something to that, right? We, as good as Kevin Garnett was, we still had to see him knocking big shots late. At least sometimes, right? Not to be the top scorer on his team, which he wasn't when the Celtics, you know, were at their best. He wasn't their best scorer. We don't know if Ingram, we can't call it empty points, but where is he at down the stretch? Like, we could have gotten those answers right now, Zach, right? Last couple weeks of the season, is he putting up big numbers in big games when teams are sending most of their defensive resources to keep Zion from getting 11 dunks a game? If he does that, I think that answers the question you have, and it's a fair question because we don't know. We won't know until hopefully we'll know next year. If not, somehow there's a postseason this summer, which I'm not optimistic on. But I think that he's got the moxie for it. It's just my opinion. I know he came from Jerry Stackhouse's AAU program, and that is not easy to get through. There is nothing soft about this guy.
No, I don't think he's soft at all. I don't mean that at all. Clearly he's
I know.
To respond to live through the LeBron AD mania of that trade remember the Pacers fans chanting at him on the foul line, LeBron wants to trade you, and to go to New Orleans and be the guy right away and make an all-star team. Like, he's not soft. And by the way, I haven't ranked my guys really one to whatever yet. So I don't know if he's going to make my top three, but he's a very, very strong candidate for this award to win it outright, let alone be wherever you want. But again, this is all very hard. So give me your neck. Go up the ladder. One more.
Okay. So these guys are all about the same to me. He did not make your top 10 because you already said his name. And maybe I screwed up, but I have a real affinity for Jaylen Brown because I feel like he's one of those enigmatic players that gets in his head so much. In my book I wrote a couple years ago about the scientists and the artists, and he's a scientist. He is a very analytical player. He's a thinker. And I didn't know. We saw a glimpse, right? We saw a glimpse 2 years ago when Kyrie was out for the year. Then we saw the debacle of the Celtics last season. I didn't know, honestly, what we were going to get from him this year. And what we got is a terrific two-way player. If any team was going to – I don't know. I want to hear your opinion on this. If you had to guess what team would knock out Milwaukee, if that would happen in the East, the Raptors are a pick I bet a lot of people would say. But the Celtics and Jalen, Tatum, Hayward combinations with Smart, obviously Kemba and Brad Stevens are important people. But I just thought Jalen has that two-way ability that can get you a bunch of points. He's averaging 20 a game and do it efficiently, but also be in some games your best wing defender. I thought that was deserving of top 10 because he really could have fallen off a cliff after what happened last year, and he didn't.
7 more points a game, shooting his way up. I agree with you. His game can be a little bit more mechanical, especially in relative to Tatum, who's so smooth. Yeah, I think that I called it the Milwaukee threat level on a podcast I did like 6 weeks ago. That feels like it was about 19 years ago. Now, full disclosure, I picked Philly to make the finals before the season. So theoretically, I should be held to that. Philly's season obviously took about 19,000 sideways turns. So TBD on like, is there going to be a playoffs? Ben Simmons will be held, whatever. I had Toronto a hair ahead of Boston just because of Toronto's been there, done that toughness factor. But I agree with you. Both of those teams are head and shoulders above everybody else. And I said this before Miami slumped a little bit. I thought Miami is too, it's not, they don't belong in this conversation. Indiana doesn't belong in that conversation. To me, it's just those two teams and Philly, if they ever got their, you know what, together, I don't know. I think Jalen's really good. I have no problem with him being on this. I think he's a really good player. I also think one of the fascinating things about Tatum making the leap, and I think what Tatum did was real. I know he tailed off at like the last 5 games before the stoppage of the season, and Boston had a bunch of puzzling home games, all of which I was at because I made the huge mistake of going to Boston for games in mid-March. It really sort of cemented the hierarchy of that team. And I think to win the championship, you need that. To be a championship contender, you need that. Jaylen Brown needs to know, I'm not the guy. I'm a really good guy. I'm a guy. I'm a guy that does different stuff, but I'm not comparing him. I'm just comparing his like apex role on the Celtics. Like I'm the Pippen. I'm the guy who's just going to go out and defend like all hell. And I'm skilled enough to get 20 and that's my 20. And Jason Tatum is something else. And I think he's really good in that role. And that perfectly reasonable candidate to me.
I think I want to touch on what you said because it's super smart. As a coach who's always trying to build chemistry, I love telling the story. It's actually about the Celtics years ago. God, I want to say it was even when the games were on NBC, but I don't remember anymore. That seems like too long ago. Someone interviewed the big three, Garnett, Pierce, and Allen. I've told this story before and probably on your show even. And the person asked, who takes the game-winning shot to win a championship? And as macho as players can be, you would expect at least Pierce and Allen to point to themselves, right? And maybe deep down they felt that way. But Allen pointed to Pierce. Garnett and Pierce pointed to Allen. And they won the championship that year. And I've never forgotten that because what you said is so right. You kind of got to know your role. Now, Ray Allen's not going to take – he's not going to pass up a wide-open shot because he thinks Pierce is the better guy to shoot it. He'll take the wide-open shot every time. But what he won't do probably in that world is take the contested shot if Pierce is open. You have to have that knowledge of, okay, here's how we grade out our choices – and I've got to be authentic and honest about how I do it. And so that's one reason why I love Jalen is I felt, I mean, and listen, Hayward is no slouch, right? Kemba Walker is really good. Jason Tatum is really a superstar now. And yet he found his niche. He did his thing, but you never once felt like he thought he should own the team. And by the way, that isn't so common. There's plenty of guys who think, listen, that's why Harden wanted to leave OKC. Understandably so. Part of it was, I think I could lead the world in scoring. You're allowed to have that ego, especially when you're that good.
It's rare that you don't. And, you know, I'm working on this column I write every year called the Luke Walton All-Stars about guys who kind of scrap and claw and bounce around and hang on. And in this particular season, they find a role that works for them. And one of the guys in the column is Dorian Finney-Smith, who I think had a wonderful season, is having a wonderful season. Yeah. And I was talking to one of the Mavs old coaches, and he was saying Dorian is one of the only guys I've ever worked with in the league who never thought he was anything that he wasn't. He never thought, I'm an all-star, I need touches, I need this. He knew exactly what he was, and he just said, I'm going to grind and grind, and I'm going to be that guy, and that's all I'm going to be. Never complained about anything. It's very unusual. Tatum, by the way, spoiler alert, he's on my list here.
Me too.
I think he's an all NBA candidate now. Like, no, I think there's a perception that this late run sort of like he was having a good, like an okay season. And now this late run catapulted him. He averaged 24 a game for the season on 40% shooting from three. Like his numbers stack up with any number of guys like that are candidates for the fifth and sixth forward spots on all NBA, but that's neither here nor there. Go up the ladder.
Okay, so we just did. All right, my number seven. I'm almost afraid isn't going to be on your list, but I think what he did is extraordinary. I went with Bam Adebayo from Miami.
Are you kidding me? Bam is of course Bam's on my list.
Well, you're smart, but when I've mentioned this to people, they all seem a little bit surprised because his numbers aren't staggering. 16 points a game, 10 rebounds, but what to do what he did, which is listen, think about this. He went from being an athlete that we weren't really sure what he could do. And I think you've written an amazing piece about him, but he kind of averages 5 assists a game. He averaged 2 last year. Who does that? Like Marc Gasol? Like no one becomes that facilitator of your offense at that position out of nowhere. It's extraordinary. Plus what he does defensively. He's a guy that I never expected this from because I didn't really follow it much in college, but what an amazing talent. And without him, the Heat are dead.
He averaging almost 8 points a game more than he did last year. He's the guy. Remember, I talked about how you got your guys that made superstar jumps and guys that made from nothing to this like good jumps. And I like the guys in the middle that go from like interesting to he's good, not a top 20 guy.
Yeah,
but really good. Bam is the one that's in that sweet spot. And a lot of it is opportunity, right? Like he's playing a lot more. Hassan Whiteside's gone. Eric Spoelstra, let him go. Let him bring the ball up. Let him facilitate. But again, like we talked about with Norm Powell, opportunity doesn't guarantee efficiency. Opportunity doesn't guarantee that in a full-time starter role against other full-time starters with a lot more responsibility that you're not going to take a year that's this is harder than I thought. My numbers all took a hit, but I'll be ready next year. He just went right to it and thrived. And, you know, he and Jimmy Butler are neck and neck for the most important player on that team.
Yeah, I'm glad you felt that way. I didn't think it was too stupid to put him on. My next guy, you might feel that way because he doesn't really measure up to anyone else on our list because his numbers aren't huge. But I will tell you this. I was so high on what this guy did this year. My first rankings had him at 3. I've since moved him up to 6. I think I moved this guy down to 6, and he probably should be lower. But he was one of the worst rookies in the league last year, Dante DiVincenzo.
He's on my list. We're in sync.
Honestly, Zach, again, I wasn't sure the guy was going to make it. I liked him. He had a great run at Villanova in the playoffs. It's a big reason why he got drafted in the first round. I don't think anyone had him projected to go first round before the season. So that's always worrisome to me. And then nothing last year. I mean, the word I used for him was lost. He was lost position as a player. And now he's a key player and by far the best team in the league on both ends. He's really changed his game, became a shooter, became a defender, makes simple plays. If he isn't this good, Milwaukee isn't this good. It's simple as that. So that's why I gave him a top 6 ranking.
If that jumper ever really comes.
Yeah, right.
Like it's 34% this year. That's good. That's good. Yeah. But he gets a lot of great looks as everybody does playing with Giannis. Right. It's sort of the same. It's like the Pat Connaughton syndrome where like you think Pat Connaughton's a really good shooter and then you look at his numbers like, oh, it's not quite there. But I'll tell you what Dante DiVincenzo is. He's a basketball player. That guy just knows how to play. He makes plays on both ends. He has a very good intuitive sense of when to help and when to recover and when to slice in for a rebound on both ends of the floor. He's doing helpful stuff all the time. Even the game where he gets 6 points and 3 rebounds, you watch him and like that guy just did like 8 helpful things in a key stretch of the game. He's on my list and he's sort of emblematic of the, I mean, he played 400 minutes as a rookie and did nothing. So he's sort of the nothing to something template of candidate. That I like. Can I tell one Bam story, by the way?
Yeah, please. I'm going to hear it.
So this got left on the cutting room floor and I thought it was very interesting and I've been waiting to find a way to tell it and I keep forgetting. So I sat down with Riley for a long time for this story because Riley loves Bam. And I asked him about the pre-draft interview with Bam, and there's the famous story that I've now written about how Bam talked to everybody, and they were like, is this guy a psychopath? What's wrong with him? And I asked Riley, you know, what's a question that you ask? You know, you've been around the league. Literally, you have a lifetime in basketball. As a player, an announcer, a coach, whatever. He's now the godfather. What do you, like, you get all these guys that you're interested in drafting. What's the one question you want to ask all of them? And what did Bam say to that question? And I've never heard Pat say this before, and I wish I could have fit it in the story, but I thought it was very interesting. He said, you know, the question I'm always most interested in is, and I asked Bam, said, if you had a, and he prefaced it by saying, I'm not talking about anyone on the current Heat team. Now, this was in January, so you can put two and two together. He said, if you had a teammate who was burning the candle at both ends, going out at night, not taking care of himself, and you thought that it was hurting our chances to win, what would you do, and how bad would it have to get for you to come tell me upstairs? I thought that was a very interesting question. And he doesn't, he said he doesn't want players to tell him. He does not want to hear them. He, in fact, it's the opposite. He wants to hear that they would try to handle it internally and that they would be very hesitant to ever, he called it, throw them under the bus to me. And he said, Bam said something like, well, obviously, you know, I would try to take him one-on-one and talk to him and see what was wrong. And if we could, you know, but if he's costing us wins, if it's hurting us, you know, I'm going to try to take it into my own hands. But I think Bam said something like, it would have to be like incredibly bad for me to ever go to you. I'm sorry to tell you that. And Pat was like, no, it's exactly what I want to hear. I thought that was a very interesting question. Don't you?
Absolutely. It's actually something I've heard similar things. I've heard executives ask people about gambling and drinking and those kinds of things. The best answer, and I don't know that I really remember the total answer, but the best guy who answered it from what I was told years ago, you remember Johnny Flynn, I know.
Of course.
I actually love Johnny Flynn and thought he was a very good six-man guy in the league. I don't really know what happened to him. Maybe you do. But an executive told me that same kind of question, he blew it out. It was the greatest answer they ever heard. He was sweet about it, but he was stern and just said, I'm going to meet with that guy one-on-one and we're going to resolve this problem. But he definitely did not want to go to executives unless there was just no other choice, unless it was a gambling issue, because that really screws everyone up.
That's a good point.
Yeah. You can't just handle that yourself. And that's what he said. I love all that kind of stuff. And Bam, don't tell me I wasn't wrong. You did write a big piece on Bam.
Oh yeah, no, I wrote a huge piece.
I've read so much of your stuff, and we have a lot of friends who write. So
it might be my favorite thing I've ever written. I'm a Bam. I think Bam is a stud and the real deal. Now I don't know if he's ever going to be, you know, the Heat think he could be a top 15 player in the NBA, and you hear them say, you know, if that jumper, if he ever forget threes. If he just ever gets the Al Horford 20-footer pick and pop, that's a big, big problem. I mean, he doesn't have that. He kind of dribbles in for little floaters, and occasionally he'll take like a 13-foot jumper. If he ever gets that to the point where that's a workable release valve, then you're talking about, you know, threes aside, and he can shoot threes in practice, so who knows. But that's step one to me of him becoming another level of a player.
He's so unique. He, again, what he did – it just, Marc Gasol took him 12 years to do what he's doing, you know, what he started doing. For him to do it so young was incredible.
5-hour energy shots are portable and effective at giving you the alert, energized feeling you need to get work done, even if you are working from home, because that couch can be a little too comfortable and convenient. 5-hour energy shots help you get through your day with zero sugar, 4 calories, precisely 4, in a convenient portable size. It's the perfect pick-me-up for busy, hardworking people, even if you're working from home. It also comes in 2 great extra strength tropical tastes, strawberry banana and tropical burst. Ooh, they are delicious and can take you to a tropical get stuff done experience. Go online to 5hourenergy.com to learn more.
All right, so now we're in our top 5.
Up the ladder, go ahead.
I feel good about my top 5, but I feel like there's going to be one spot that I have some of that you don't have, or vice versa. Number 5 for me is an amazing story. It's one of those rare guys who makes the jump. You already referenced it, so I think he's on your list. When you go from good rookie to freaking amazing second year player, that just doesn't happen very much. So I have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Ooh, I love it.
He is, I mean, he was good last year. We have to say he was good last year, but OKC is one of the better success stories, I think, without question. And I give Chris Paul and actually Billy Donovan a lot of credit for it. But Shea's their best scorer. He's averaging 6 rebounds a game. When you go against them, and as you know, a lot of guys that I help in the league, like, you have to account for Shea when you go into that game. You can't just prepare for Schroeder and Chris Paul. And Schroeder is probably, I mean, he may be on your list. I feel like he's been good before. That was one, I didn't mention this before, Zach. If you've been really good before, like, Derrick Rose to me is an amazing story.
Those guys, Schroeder has had this season essentially with not quite as good shooting before.
Right. But he's been a great story this year. I don't know that we thought Shea would get to 19 a game on a legit playoff team. That's freaking hard to beat. So I put him in my number 5 slot.
I got no problem with that. 19 points a game, up from 10 the year before. Shooting is about the same. He keeps finding these roles where he's sort of a weird hybrid guard, and the playmaking aspect of his game has sort of stalled out a little bit, and maybe that's what turned me off to him as a candidate. But like I said, he was one of my final cuts. I love watching him play. I think he's going to be a monster two-way player. I said when the Thunder got him, and even before that he was going to make all-star teams. Now, I don't know how many, 1, 2, 4, I don't know, in his future. And I still think that's true. And I think he was good enough this season to crack the door open to, will he ever make an all-NBA team? I think that's now a reasonable discussion. So I got no problem with that. Shea's a stud.
That's a great point that he's in that number. All right, number 4 for me, who initially – I'm very proud to say didn't make my top 10 because his team's awful. And I don't like watching them play. And when I rang off my, I think a 10 at that point to my son, who follows the league probably more closely than I do, he right away said, "Dad, are you an idiot? You don't have Devontae Graham on your team?"
I knew it was going to be Devontae Graham. He's on my list too.
So I quickly said, "Jesus, son, you're right." So I went back, and of course I actually liked watching him, but I just watched him on Synergy because I couldn't stomach watching their team play. So I just watch his plays during the course of the season. But, I mean, there are people who might rank him number 1. I mean, what he did, what did he go from 4.7, 18.2 points per game, highlight-level player, just, you know, a much better shooter, just on a terrible team. But I couldn't punish him for having a monstrous improvement. Another guy that we weren't sure how good he would end up being. This guy's going to be really good for a long time.
Yeah, there's one other guy that's neck and neck with him is the ultimate to me, nothing to something candidates for this award. His playmaking, 7.5 assists a game, his playmaking was way more advanced than I thought it was. And I think that the Hornets thought it was, but David Thorpe, you don't like watching the Charlotte Hornets. So this is a frisky young team. You must defend this take to the 9 Charlotte Hornet fans that are still existing and listening to this podcast. What's wrong with the Charlotte Hornets of 2019-2020?
It's a great question. So, I mean, Graham saves it a lot. I actually like their coach a lot. He's the reason why I go back and watch what they did with Devontae, is to see what the coach did to get him stuff. I don't like the franchise, the people who run it. I don't know that they have any idea. I don't think they know what they're doing. I don't think they have a lot of rhyme or reason to the draft picks, although I'd be happy to say the kid they got from Kentucky this year really grew on me quickly.
PJ Washington's good. I think he's going to make first team all rookie for me.
Absolutely. I could get that. When I watched him on tape before the season, he did nothing this summer. I think he was injured some. Very quickly, I realized, oh, this guy can really play. So that to me was a big positive. And then we see Devontae. There's something about the way they've made a lot of the decisions. I don't like the Martin twins at all. I think they're amazing athletes who are like 26 years old and not fans of them long term. Although the guy that got drafted has a chance. The other one I thought was incredibly selfish. The one that wasn't drafted, but they signed. I can't keep them apart. They're twins, so it's hard.
I believe Caleb was undrafted and Cody.
Yeah, Cody's better and
Cody. I like Cody. I think Cody's got a chance.
A great athlete, great motor. That always helps me. He played more unselfishly than his brother did, which is ironic because the brother's the one that didn't get drafted. But I've reached my fill with other teams that are bad that I still have to kind of have to follow.
Well, first of all, the Martin twins need to either get different hairstyles or wear different colored shoes because they're freaking impossible to tell apart on the court, and it drives me crazy, and I don't want to rewind to figure out which freaking Martin twin just did a thing I like or don't like. I like the Bridges kid. He has a chance. Bridges and Washington have a chance. Yeah, they've had a rough – the Hornets have had a rough decade of decision-making. Okay, that makes – I think Graham's a really good candidate. The shooting really tailed off, and the 40% shooting from two and inability to finish at the rim are a little problematic. Now, he's small, and, you know, these guys that have never played big NBA minutes before, there's just a wall you hit sometimes because, like, this is 63 for him games of, like, you're all of a sudden from not playing 35 minutes as the number one option on an NBA team. Like, so I can forgive Devonte Graham in his first year of that for kind of hitting the wall a little bit.
Well, there's one other thing too that you have to factor in is every year this is happening more and more. Teams are playing, I call it defensive blackjack. They're playing the odds. And so what you said is right. He's the number one option, which means every team is playing blackjack with him. They're trying to force him into the least likely possibility that he would score or get fouled. Of course he's going to score and get fouled, but you're trying to create opportunities where you're getting, lots of aces and tens playing blackjack and he's getting a lot of sixes. He's going to win once in a while, but not as much. And over the course of the season, that book gets written tighter and tighter and it gets harder and harder. That's why it's so hard. This leads me actually to my number three guy. To be really good and then take a big step forward when you go from being the second option to the first option, you can figure out who I'm talking about. It's so hard because, again, everyone's playing blackjack against you because you're the one guy they have to stop, which is why at number three, I've got Siakam.
Ooh, love it.
He became such an incredible player when, again, I know what teams are scouting on, what they're focused on, and it's to slow him down. And, of course, he's got help in whereas Graham doesn't. He's got help in Lowry and Gasol. That alone is just so big. But it is really hard to be a very, very good number two. Remember in the NBA Finals, early in the game, he scored 1-on-1 against Draymond Green. And I tweeted, because I told this to Henry Abbott, my partner and my boss at True Hoop, that if Siakam can score on Green, it's going to be a much tougher series. This is before the injuries hit, the last injuries. And I didn't know if he could score on Green, but he could. And so I knew that he had it in him. He didn't need it as much because he had who he had next to him. This year he didn't. And for him to take the jump the way he did, going from 17 to 23.5 a game, he's the best player on a great team. I feel like I had to honor him with that slot, although, like I said, there's an argument to make for all these guys.
Siakam may be the biggest two-year improvement in the history of basketball. I mean, if you look at his stats from 17-18 till now, it is absolutely astonishing. He won this award last year, I think. I voted for him. I'm pretty sure he won. Should he win it 2 years in a row? You just made the argument. 6.5 more points a game. People will look at his advanced numbers and his shooting percentage and say they kind of plateaued. Is he really that much better? All his efficiency numbers are just about the same. And that goes back to, again, role and just maintaining that efficiency in the enormous burden. Remember, Kyle Lowry missed 10, 12 games early in the season. And Siakam kept them afloat during that stretch with just an incredible stretch of games. And, to average whatever he averaged, I think he averaged like 23 a game. I mean, again, 2 years ago, he averaged 7 points a game and made 29 threes. This year, he averaged 24 points a game and made 115 threes. It's just absolutely incredible. He's on my list. He's on my list of 10. He's probably not going to make my top three when I submit my ballot, whenever that is, but I think he's a perfectly good candidate. He's a great guy, a great teammate, and just had an unbelievable year. All right, go up. What do you got?
I want to ask you a question about Pascal, though, because you talk to every team in the league. So your point is so good. Think about 2 years ago. Zach, 2 years ago, how many teams were calling Masai trying to acquire Pascal Siakam, and they compare that number to now, right? Yeah. You could have had him for a lot less 2 years ago. I guarantee you his phone wasn't burning up. Nobody saw this, which makes his story so amazing.
Now you're not calling because you're not getting them unless you offer, like a top 10 player and or a lot of other stuff.
Right, exactly.
So you got two spots left?
I got two spots. So there must be – so how many names do you have on your list that I've not named yet?
Five.
So let's hear. Well, I want to hear some of the names that you may just end up naming one of my top two. That's okay. Let's.
Well, I think I know who the top two are. So I'm going to name you the guys that I don't think are on your list that made mine. Markelle Fultz.
Now he made my scribbled out version.
When I was looking at statistics, do you know what the statistic that caught me by surprise more than any other stat, to the point that I'm actually double checking it right now?
Was it a field goal percentage?
Even more than that, which is I think 52%. Yeah. The fact that Fultz shot 72% from the line.
Yeah.
I felt like it surprised me in part because I just thought that would get a lot of attention. Because when you think of how much flack Lonzo has gotten for being a terrible foul shooter. Now, he only improved, I think, to the mid-50s this year. It wasn't like a great improvement for Lonzo. But like how big of a focus that was. And for Fultz to shoot, you know, he shot 57% on very few attempts the year. Maybe he's barely played before this year. 72% is like an average percentage. To me, if you're looking at signs that maybe he can figure it out a little bit as a shooter, 72% at the line, it doesn't look good. It's not the most attractive shot I've ever seen. But 72% is 72%. That's not nothing.
Well, and this is a guy who's clearly dealt with not just physical issues, but mental issues in terms of his shooting mechanics, as we all know. And as someone who's been teaching shooting for 30-plus years, when you're alone on the free throw line, it can really mess with your head. And it can mess with anyone's head. The fact that he is starting to move back towards some type of confidence fluidity with it is an enormously important sign. And he's a finisher. He makes shots, which is why he went number one overall. We forget so fast. No one was even arguing when he went number one overall. Like, he was legit.
Yeah. I still don't know. He's only 22 years old. He's 21, actually. 21. Next year is going to be very interesting. I've argued before. I don't think you can look at his body of work this season and say, if you're the Magic, oh, we're set. We have our number one ball handler for the next 5 years, because he still can't shoot long jumpers or won't shoot them in games. And in the playoffs, that's still going to be a problem. But I do think there are, you know, I think he's ever going to get to that kind of status? I'm skeptical, but from where he was a year ago to now, I think is a good story of improvement. The other guy who I'm betting is not on your list, I'll give you a hint and see if you can guess him. Same division as Devontae Graham. Same kind of candidate. He's the other guy I was saying my ultimate nothing to something candidate in most improved. Same division as Devontae Graham.
Let's see. It can't be Bertans, can it?
No.
I know it's not Trey.
Same skill as Davis Bertans, though.
So amazing shooter. Is it someone from the Hawks?
Nope.
I don't know. Who is it?
Duncan Robinson.
Oh, I was going to say, it's got to be one of the Heat guys, but yeah. Yeah, you think? Well, where was he last year? College?
He was in the G League. He was on a two-way contract. I'm going to look how many minutes he played in an actual Heat uniform last year.
I looked him up and thought he wouldn't be eligible because I didn't think he'd played the year before, really.
He played 161 minutes for the Heat last year. And this year,
he improved a lot. He's incredible. He's so much like Bertans, you're right.
He's taking 10 threes per 36 minutes and shot 45%.
And it's one of freaking out when he gets open.
It's one of the greatest shooting seasons in NBA history, period.
Yeah.
And a really great story of player development by him and by the Heat that I will be writing about more shortly. But he is he's averaging 14 a game, 13 a game. I mean, it's not like he's a bit player for them. He's a starter who is like a top five leading scorer for them. To me, he's a real candidate for this. And
Zach, I will tell you this. I had a player that I was working with all summer that was in Miami for their kind of their summer workouts. They were just evaluating him, and he was there for a couple of weeks. And when he got back, and this is a very, very, very good player. I think he's the best player in the G League right now. I asked him, who impressed you there? And the only name he mentioned was Duncan Robinson. He didn't bother with the guys that are clearly good players. He just said, I had no idea he was as good as he is now. He was really impressed with him.
He's much longer than people think.
Yeah.
Which means he's not the pushover on defense that people anticipated. Now he's got a lot of room to grow there, but the Heat are kicking. I can tell you Chris Quinn kicks his ass on defense every day in practice. But what's really interesting about the Heat is, and as a coach, I think you would like this, you know, and other teams have told me they admire this about the Heat, and it I asked Duncan about it, and it's true. A lot, some teams would have gotten him, said, okay, he's an A shooter, great shooter. Let's focus on some other stuff. Let's round out the other parts of his game. The Heat got him and said, he's an A shooter. Yeah, we're going to round out the other parts of his game, but we're not going to neglect that stuff. But let's turn the A into an A plus.
Yeah.
Let's make you comfortable shooting with very little space. Let's make you comfortable shooting off motion, going flaring to the corner, coming off curls, every possible motion. Let's get your release even quicker so you need no space. And Duncan Robinson told me, I don't even notice defenders anymore. Like I know exactly how much space I need to get my jump shot off. And if I have that much space, it doesn't matter where the defense is or who they are. And let's turn you into a screener like Kyle Korver. And you know, I mean, I don't want to say Steph Curry, but a guy who uses his gravity as a screener who runs around. And other teams have said that's really, really smart. And not every franchise would have taken that approach. And it's really, really paid off because becoming an A-plus shooter who can do all those things has turned him into a guy who might be like a nice bench shooter to a legitimate NBA starter.
Well, Huey Brown always says, you set screens for one reason, to make defenders think. I think it's the single smartest basketball nugget of wisdom I ever heard in my life. And I use it all the time. And so what Duncan does and what the Heat have done with him, just like when you mentioned with Curry, is as used as a screener, you're making defenders think, but because they're such elite shooters, I mean, elite of elite, they're panicking thinkers. And so there's nothing, the only thing worse than a thinker is a panicking thinker, because when they panic, they're going to choose wrong so often. And the other thing the Heat do, and I know you know this really well, I think Bam may have mentioned this to you that you put down, is it just the attention they pay to the detail of conditioning is no joke.
Oh,
it's not sadistic. There's a plan to what they're doing. You're going to be in amazing shape. And guess what? It's an athletic sport. You should be. And they do the best job of anyone, I think.
So I'm guessing your top two then were two guys who were traded for each other at the 2018 draft. Is that correct?
Wait a second. I have to think. I don't think so. So you might not even have my number one guy on your list. Others haven't either. So I'm going to go number two. He's going to be on your list. Jason Tatum is number two.
He's on my list. So that means we got some interesting things. So
I think I can't keep track of who got traded at 18. So let me just say this. Tatum to me was number two. I think some people could have him at number one. And I realize he may be below that because there's so much talent, but you said earlier that what you said earlier, Zach, is what I was thinking when I put him down, which is that this guy might be an All-NBA player now.
Yeah, and he might make it this year.
Right. And yeah, right. Not next year, this year. You can make the argument. Well, first of all, he's the best player on one of the best teams in the league. Okay, certainly in the East, and a real contender for that. He's their best player, and he's become a two-way player, which is something I did look at. He's probably a top 20 on anyone's list for the league, and there's no way. And he also did the other things, like improved dramatically from scoring with 16 to almost 24, and he almost doubled. He went for 2 point whatever, the 4.7 free throws, which is an area of concern. His ball handling sucked. It's just never been good. And Celtics fans, who I'm not one of them, I just watch Al games, they would always complain to me, but why is Tatum always trying to do much off the dribble? Watch him now. He's roasting people off the dribble. And so to me, to make that jump from where he was, which was a little bit on the precipice of, is if this guy falters a little bit, there's going to be some negative stuff about him. And instead, he's a superstar. He's got a real shot to be a top 15 player this year. So that's why I put him in number two.
He's on my list. I have no issues with anything you just said. I think he was absolutely fantastic. His ball handling and craft have improved a lot. I think his playmaking came up a little bit and will continue to come up, and his defense is, I don't know that he's going to really make my shortlist for all defense second team, but he might. I mean, he's that good. He's a really, really good defensive player. Now they spare him some power forward duty, like Jalen Brown takes the bulk of that. And I know they think that helps Jason, to sort of be spared that jostling, but he's a stud. I'd have no issue with him winning, but this does mean that the two guys who were famously traded for each other at the 2018 NBA draft, that you only have one of them, or maybe zero of them, and I mean Trae Young and Luka Doncic.
Yeah, so I don't have Trae on the list.
Spicy.
Here's why.
Is it because he's the worst defensive player in the league?
Exactly. My son is very unhappy with me because it's his favorite player. As you know, many 18 and 19 year old serious basketball players are in love with Trae. He followed him all through his year at Oklahoma. He loves to play him when he plays 2K. But I couldn't get past it, Zach. I love his game, and I don't know that the trade should have happened because number one is Luka. But Trae's lack of interest in defense at all. I grew up as a defensive guy. I couldn't do it. But I certainly wouldn't argue with anyone that has him even number one or two because his offensive game is beyond extraordinary. But, yeah, I don't have Trae on my list.
And so the Hawks fans will say, well, James Harden doesn't play defense. And when did Luka Doncic become a defensive player? Yeah. And my response to that would be Luka Doncic is much taller and much heavier than Trae Young. And that by itself makes him a much better defensive player because you can put him, even if you're hiding him, you can hide him anywhere. You can put him anywhere you want, on any player you want. It means he's going to get 8 rebounds a game and put and box out and do those things that like – and James Harden, look, I'm not going to sit here and argue James Harden is a good defensive player, but he has size and can – he's a great post defender. He can do things. Trae Young, you got nothing. You got no place to hide him. No. There's nowhere where he's going to be safe. He's a piece of tissue paper floating around the court that everyone can just move willy-nilly wherever they want. So it is not – but at the same time, he made my list because 10 points per game – increase. He averaged almost 30 a game. He's got to bring something, some level of effort on the other end of the floor, or else at some point the teammates are going to start grumbling if they're not already and saying, hey, you're supposed to be the best guy on our team, man. You can't just be dying every single possession. I'm sick of covering for you.
He can't be a souped up version of Jordan Clarkson and make my list. There's the word I call integrity. I didn't like my high school coach at all, but he definitely instilled the thought that he was a Bobby Knight guy. You had to play defense. You had at least care. And I'm not convinced Trae cared this year. I think he will care. I'm not at all disparaging him. I'm a fan, and I actually want Atlanta to be great. I was hoping they got Zion in the lottery because I wanted him and Trae together. But I just never felt like it mattered. That didn't matter to him. And again, they were bad, but you have to, it has to matter. You have to have some disposition. And I think it matters to Luka. And when you mentioned Harden, you were right to say he's one of the better low post defenders in the league. And I think a year ago, he led the league in deflections. Like he's doing something. Trae's doing.
Yeah, I get it.
Number one, I got Luka. I didn't know this going in. And by the way, I totally forgot about that trade. I just don't pay attention to the draft night stuff. When they start playing games, when I really start paying attention, Luka to me, just like we said with Tatum, Zach, he's an all league player. He's an MVP candidate on a team that no one thought. Well, most people thought we're not likely to make the playoffs. I guess you could make an argument for it that they would, but they're going. If there was a playoff, they'd be in it. And he's one of the best players in the world. And that leap just doesn't happen often. It's not normal to do what he's done. I don't care what he did in Europe because we're not factoring that in. We're only factoring one year to the other. And he went from being the rookie of the year, really good player, to one of the best players in the world.
29-9-9 from 21-8-6.
Yeah. On a playoff team.
57% on twos, which is, I think, the most impressive part of his growth, was his ability to get to where he wants to go and finish. 50% on twos the year before. I believe he shot 75% in the restricted area this year. That's like LeBron shoots 75% in the restricted area. 9 free throws a game. And, you know, there was a period of time where they were playing pretty well without him, and that sort of chipped away at, you know, people, and they were losing a lot of close games. And you remember Porzingis played a bunch of big games without him. But I think for the season, I don't have it right in front of me, but I believe they were 6-7 in games that Doncic missed. He's clearly, you know, these guys who commandeer the ball every single possession, when they go out and you redistribute your offense, you can make up for their absence, I think, in the short term, more than you anticipate. But in the long term and against the best competition, Dallas obviously needs him. And he was absolutely fantastic this year. I think he's going to win this award. He would probably get my vote. I'm not entirely convinced of it yet, but I don't know if he's going to make the MVP ballot, but if there are seven candidates, he's one of them to be sort of 3, 4, or 5, and he'll deserve it. He was absolutely outstanding. And I'm sorry to the Hawks fans. He's on another level from Trae Young.
There's no doubt of that. When you talk to players, players can be really competitive to the point where they don't love to see someone else have this kind of talent at this age. Probably just from self-preservation standpoints, any veteran players worry about the next generation. You talk to more players than I do probably in a very casual way because you're friendly with them as a reporter. You're always just talking to them. Does anyone ever say like, yeah, he's overrated? I've never had someone say that to me.
No. In fact, I think he's a player that people look around the league and think, boy, it'd be kind of fun to play with him because he has
They trust him. His teammates trust him for sure. I look at how veterans react to him. They want the ball in his hands. He doesn't have to steal from them, as some guys have done over the years. They want the ball in his hands. And here's the other thing. He took 9 free throws a game. He's shooting 32% from three. To me, that's a scary number, Zach, because that number's going to go up.
Well, he takes the second toughest diet of threes, I think, in the whole league behind Harden. And maybe Steph, I guess, when Steph gets healthy.
You're right. Right.
Steph is just another universe, obviously, as a shooter. And I do think in some Dallas games, there are maybe two sidestep or step back threes a game that they're not even heat checks. They're kind of like cold checks. Like he's missed a couple and he's like, I got to take one more just to see if I can get rolling here. They're kind of like cold checks that I feel like would annoy me a little bit if I was one of his teammates. But he's a fantastic passer. He has every pass in his bag. And my favorite thing about Luka, and he came into the league with this, is it's not just pound, 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 make play that leads to assist or shot. He has like a little give and go, improvisational, give it up, get it back, set a random screen, make a random cut. And I think superstars who have that ingredient in their game are really, really fun for other people to play with. And I think if he even sort of nudged his game like 8% more in that direction, I think that plus more shooting, I think he has another level to get to.
Well, your point on that, on the two or three shots he takes a game that he probably shouldn't take. You're right. You would never tell Picasso how to paint between the lines. You got to let him do his thing.
You got to let him do it. You just have to, I guess.
He'll figure it out because he wants to win. But your point on him knowing how to play, what you said earlier about Dante, that means you have to know how to play without the ball. That's where Curry's so amazing too. And LeBron, like they don't always have to have the ball to be the greatest player on the court. You want them to have the ball because they're so skilled and talented, but Luka is born to play. He is the natural as much as anyone I've ever seen play. I used to say that with Nick Kalathis, who's probably the best guard in Europe the last 12 years. He was like Mozart with the ball. Luka's the same way, just more talented. Dallas has someone that is going to be in the MVP. I mean, he's going to be an MVP candidate for a while. He's going to be in the running for a while.
Yeah, and I don't think I've ever seen anyone. I don't know who Luka played with in Europe. I'm not well versed in that, but I don't know anyone who's ever improved from one year to the next as a lob passer specifically more than him. Like Luka was like a not great kind of ugly lob passer as a rookie, and this year he was throwing these like the touch, the arc, the velocity, the distance, the weird angles, like they were perfect. And it's like, man, to go from point A to point B that fast at that particular kind of pass, which is a very important NBA pass, and particularly in Dallas's offense, whew, that was fun to see.
Yeah, becoming an accurate passer is not automatic. Jeremy Lin still can't pass the ball. He may want to pass the ball, but he was never able to throw an accurate pass. It's one of the things that most people overlook. But as coaches, it drives us crazy. When you know a guy's open, just freaking throw the ball to him where he can catch it and shoot it or dunk it. So that, yeah, you're not wrong on that. Yeah, and I think your point on defensive stuff is really good too. He's got the size and body and he's willing to some degree. But once the games get more and more serious, I think you'll even see that part grow because again, he wants to win. Like at some point, you can't just be a great player. We grade you differently as guys like James Harden and Dwight Howard know too well. He's going to have to do the other things. And then he really jumps into top three MVP candidate like Giannis, right? Because he's doing, and Kawhi, whatever, he's doing everything.
Coach, this has been a lot of fun. I think we hit every name on my list, and including the ones that we didn't overlap on. Pretty strong overlap. We did not pre-plan these or share these with each other. So always a lot of fun to talk to you. Please stay safe down there, and hopefully we'll talk in a more normal circumstance pretty soon.
That'd be great. Thanks for having me, Zach. Stay safe, my man.